amid growing concerns about violence against Christians.
Recent upsurge in spitting and hitting attacks on clergy and the vandalism of Christian sites.
Greetings of peace. I have an extremely important question to ask a certain group of Christians.
Should Christians support the state of Israel?
In the first 5 minutes, he was spat at five times.
And before I do, I need every Christian to watch this. Okay, you watched that. By the way, on your own time, you can watch. There are many more videos like this. Now let's do one more clip. It's of a Christian pastor, and then I'm going to bring out my Christian guest.
Israel should make the Gaza Strip a parking lot by this time next week. Destroy the whole thing. I'm sick of all these Christians saying we ought to have peace with Islam. Islam is a satanic death cult, and they would cut your head off before I said amen in this sermon if they had a chance to.
All right, so I want you guys to remember those clips, because my questions are going to revolve around those clips with my next guest, Allison Weir. She's from If Americans, remember this website, If Americans Only Knew. She independently traveled throughout the West Bank, the Gaza Strip. Mrs. Weir found the situation largely the reverse of what was being reported by the American media. Upon further examination of the issues at hand, she read dozens of books on the topic. She found that the U.S. press portrayal was significantly at odds with information being reported by the mainstream media throughout the rest of the world. So without further ado, let's bring out our special guest, Allison Weir.
This is the D Show.
Good, I love you very much. I love all the work that you're doing.
When I was ready to talk about it, I would only talk to you.
I was explaining how much respect I have for the faith of Islam.
Welcome to the D Show. The D Show.
Hello, Allison. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you for coming back on the program. It's good to see you. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to open up with this question, Allison. To us Muslims, this seems like a very strange relationship. On one end, you have Christians being spit at, told to go back home. On the other end, you have Christian pastors who are supposed to be preaching peace, love, mercy, forgiveness, Jesus, the Prince of Peace, turn the other cheek, love your neighbor. But instead, they're supporting the killing of babies. They're encouraging their congregations to basically throw away their money in supporting this. It's a very strange relationship. If you can help us understand the rationale, the logic behind this.
I'd be glad to. Largely, there are a number of things that are behind it. You know, I've been working on this issue for 20 years now, after I traveled over to the West Bank and Gaza in early 2001 as a freelance reporter and saw for myself what was going on. I wasn't on some tour conducted by Palestinians or by Israelis. Most Christians that go over there go on tours conducted by Israel. So they're shown certain things and not shown other things. It's very important to go independently. Many Christians have, so others besides me have actually also seen what's going on. But most of us don't have the ability to do that. And so most people in the United States, on all the issues that are important in our country, rely on the U.S. media for our information and think we know what's going on from that information. I think many of us know if we're liberals, we don't trust the conservative media. If we're conservative media, we don't trust the liberal media. Most of us don't know that neither type of media is reliable on the issue of Israel-Palestine, that there's a great deal mainly of omission and exaggeration. So, for example, the recent attacks on Israel on October 7th, I believe it was, that got so much attention. Mainly Americans, we got the Israeli narrative. The U.S. journalists over there were shown around by Israeli forces, by the Israeli military. They received briefings by the Israeli military spokesperson. And there were a lot of exaggerations made at the beginning and since that have since proven to be false. But some of them were retracted later, but most people don't know they were retracted. So that pastor that we just saw in his congregation, no doubt, believed that Hamas had beheaded babies. This is completely untrue. Anybody that looks into it independently sees that accusation has withdrawn. They withdrew that they were beheaded, but they said dozens of babies were killed. No, that's another thing that was false. So there are atrocity stories, as we know, from previous wars. World War I, the Huns were eating, babies, supposedly. And, each war has its own propaganda. And Israel has a great deal of propaganda about what it does all the time. And unfortunately, the media often just transcribe that propaganda as though it's news. So a lot of people are being misled about what's going on. And it's not just about October 7th. This is successful because it goes on top of years and years of misinformation from the U.S. media on this issue. Now and then there are very good articles, but quite often even the articles that seem like they're balanced and neutral and objective almost always have pro-Israel spin in them when you actually know what went on. And some articles, many reports are far worse than that. They're exaggerating the Israeli claims and they're omitting major facts so Americans don't know what's going on. For example, they don't know that Palestinians in Gaza, the Gazans, men, women, and children, over 2 million of them are living in largely a prison. There are only a few exits and entrances to Gaza. I think it's about two or three. I've been and gone through two of them myself. These are closed off by armed guards. This is what it's like if you wanted to leave, Michigan or Arkansas or California, and there are armed guards around where you could only leave certain places because there's a fortified barrier around Gaza that was built beginning in about 1991 and become more and more fortified over the years. So you cannot get out unless Israeli armed guards let you out. You have to get special permission from Israel to leave your own land. They usually don't give it. And even to get back in, you have to get permission to get back in. It's a prison to the extent that Americans have no idea. And within that prison, people have been deprived of sufficient food for a long time. They've been deprived of a lot of important building materials. Often medical supplies can't get in. There was a time, probably, of course, now, but even before the recent actions, there were insufficient life-saving medicines were not available because they weren't allowed in. So the desperation for those 2 million people inside that prison has been growing over the years. Also, people need to know that about 70 to 80%, probably 80% of the people living in Gaza, those families in Gaza, are people that were pushed out by Israel in 1948 and 49, that were originally from what we now call Israel. Their land, their homes, their businesses were all stolen, and they were forced out of there. And most of them, they went up different places, but a great many of them ended up in Gaza. So now the Gazan population are people who are living quite often in poverty because of a blockade from Israel that's been going on over 17 years. They're living in poverty because of Israeli actions. They're living in a prison because Israel is keeping them there. And yet they were prosperous originally. People my age, when I was born, there wasn't any Israel. There was Palestine. The war of its founding war, which was very brutal, took it over and named it Israel. So the people in Gaza are living under conditions no American could tolerate either. But Americans don't know that. American Christians, most of them, unless they've studied this independently and gone there independently and researched it for themselves, don't know any of these facts. They just get the facts that Israel puts out and our U.S. media just echo and repeat too often. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the major factors. Then the other thing is that there is a theology that began often called dispensationalism. There's a type of theology that was
dispensationalism.
Yes, most of us.
Okay. Yes.
You know, have never heard of. When I was growing up, nobody ever. I was in a military family, so I had moved around a lot. I attended churches in a number of different states, and sometimes on military bases. And I never even heard this dispensationalism. It was developed in mid to late 1800s by a sort of obscure sect within England, the Brethren, it was called something like that.
The Plymouth Brethren?
The Plymouth Brethren. Very few, you know about it, but most Americans don't know about it. So I didn't know about it till I studied it and thought, where did this come from? What came from an obscure sect? You know, there are ones like that around today that have different theologies that, don't have many adherents, but they're around. This one wouldn't have been very widespread, except it was taken up by a man named Cyrus Scofield, who was a pastor in, I believe it was Texas. A very sketchy man. He had abandoned his wife and children. I believe he was even in prison for a while for some scams that he was running. But he grew to be influential, and he wrote a book called the Annotated Scofield Reference Bible that began to be used in a lot of Bible colleges, and in many people apparently have that Bible. I have a copy of it somewhere. I never had seen it before, but that became very influential. Now, the thing that's interesting, so that's largely what really spread this dispensationalism. What's interesting is that the Bible was published by the Oxford University Press, which is not the usual place where a Texas preacher would be able to get his Bible, his own annotated Bible published. So his biographer named Mr. Canfield, I've forgotten his first name. If you read the biography, which everybody should, of Cyrus Scofield, you find out all of these things that I'm saying, but you also find out that the biographer writes that it seems likely somebody else was behind Scofield, funding him and giving him the access to people in places he would not have had otherwise. The biographer notes that he was a member of a Manhattan literary club. Now, again, is this where, a Christian minister, especially an evangelical minister, would be a member of a Manhattan literary club? But he was. He was also, at that time, was a man named Samuel Untermeyer, who was a very powerful Jewish attorney in Manhattan. I think he was the first people to receive a $1 million award at a time, and that's probably worth $10 million today, maybe more. And he was a fervent Israel partisan, working very hard to create the state of Israel, which did not exist yet. This was in the very early 1900s, but he was part of this movement that most of us had never heard of, political Zionism, that was very active in Europe and in the United States, not in the region. The Jewish people that were living in Palestine at that time were actually opposed to this political Zionism, but Samuel Untermeyer was a powerful part of the movement. He was in that literary club at the same time that Scofield was, and the biographer suggests, and to me this makes a great deal of sense, that it was Untermeyer and his wealth that opened doors for Scofield to produce a Bible that was very useful for the Zionist project of taking over Palestine to create a Jewish state. A lot.
Wow, this is, excuse me?
I was just going to mention, at the time that it was published, there were a number of very reputable and respected theologians at the time, and I think evangelical theologians who wrote books exposing the fact that this reference Bible was just not accurate, that it had misinformation in it that was not to be trusted. So this was written at the time. But when, as we all know in this world, if you have lots of money, you can push your message. There are evangelical fundamentalist Christians who have been very supportive of the Palestinian cause for many decades, but they didn't get a jet plane given to them as Jerry Falwell was, so that he could go around saying what Israel wanted him to say. And somebody like Ted Price, who was one of the, I think he and his father were behind the National Prayer Day, doesn't have a jet plane and people never hear from him. So,
I think this is answering the question, what you just broke down. I asked the question also, I had a pastor on, a senior pastor, he's been around for a long time, Pastor Rick, and he pretty much went over in detail how this dispensationalism, which is pretty much Zionism packaged into Christian creed. And he went over the similar things you're talking about. So now it helps us understand where many Christians are torn between seeing babies just being decapitated and bombs falling on innocent human beings. And now why would they align with this? But they think, because as Pastor Rick was telling me, and we're understanding from you also, this, they've been indoctrinated through this con person, Schofield, in this Bible that was funded by this certain ideology in there that now connects certain verses of the Bible to this modern state of Israel. And from there, they made it a part of the Christian creed, that Christians feel this is a part of their theology.
Oh, some Christians.
And they're sinful.
Some Christians.
Some Christians, yes. Absolutely, yes. Some Christians feel that this is a part of their creed. Is that correct? They're sinful. So I think this is very important that we unpackage this so Christians can see this is not a part of their creed. This is fake. They're trying to push. There's some prophecies also that revolve around this that they're trying to come to fulfill. Is this correct?
That's right. There's,
then when I asked Pastor, if you can talk about that.
Certain Christian, you know, scriptures that they're trying to emphasize and incorrectly interpret and ignore all the rest of the New Testament. It's sort of, you know, it's laughable, except it's very dangerous and very sad and causing major destruction, not only tragedy in Israel-Palestine, but it is causing great damage to our own country. I have 8 grandchildren, and I feel they're exposed to risk by what Israel's doing and the fact that our government is funding it. But getting back to this theology, just to mention also, so, you know, this was the root of it. It still goes on, that so-called reference Bible keeps being republished every few years and actually gets worse and worse, interestingly. And then also on top of that, you have a group called supposedly Christians United for Israel, Kufi,
yes,
and Pastor Hagee, that promote this, you know, very, very, to me, anti-Christian, very pro-Israel, with a large congregation of probably very decent people who are being misled and don't know. Just to give a little bit of the background, I have some. All of this is on our website, If Americans Knew. But, for example, they don't mention that the person who really founded Christians United for Israel, who was the executive director for many years of that organization, was a man named David Brog, who was a Jewish attorney, who practiced law in Tel Aviv, and who has been the major force behind supposedly Christians United for Israel. The current executive director is listed in Israel as the 50 most influential Jews in the world. This is behind Kufi. The action director is an Israeli citizen. So, you know, people need to look into things more closely and see who's really pulling the strings behind the scenes.
I think many people are scared to look into things because they're scared to be labeled. They're scared being canceled. But we've had rabbis on, we've had Christians, we've had people, good-hearted people who don't agree with this. And they're speaking out, and more people are beginning to speak out because Christians don't want this to represent them and their faith. And now I think it's even more important when they see this is not a creedal thing. They're not sinful for not supporting this. Like, there's verses in the Bible, and this is what the Christians that I spoke to, including the pastor, you could tell me what would you agree that these verses, for example, whoever blesses thee will be blessed, whoever curses thee will be cursed. You'll see politicians and others who will hold the flag and quote this verse, and they'll connect this to the state. And when I asked the pastor, he says, no, this is bogus. This is not correct.
That's right.
What would you say?
It's not.
Are you familiar with the verse? This is like the bread and butter?
Yes. I've looked into it. First of all, it's often really not translated correctly. It's not referring to the modern state of Israel. It's talking to many people that feel that the Old Testament, there was a New Testament. These Christians need to remember that there was a New Testament. And in that Testament, it taught very differently than what's in the Old Testament. And that with the coming of that, the chosen people became all people, not just one particular ethnic group. So, just read the New Testament for yourself and what it taught. And that pretty much refutes taking a few little pieces of it out of context. I found that's interesting is that even people that were brought up with that, clearly misunderstood theology, when they go and see in person what's going on, when they meet Palestinians, both Palestinian Muslims and Palestinian Christians, that's another thing that the media largely prevent Americans from knowing, is that many Palestinians are Christians, that they've lived, they live side by side with Muslim neighbors and colleagues and co-workers, have done this for many years. They're Christians in Gaza itself. Israel, and its shelling recently damaged at least two Christian churches in Gaza. One of them, one of the most ancient Christian churches in the world, was damaged by Israeli shelling. So,
That's a very important point. What you just said, there are also Christians there who are being persecuted and oppressed. What is it, like 10% or more are Christians, Palestinian Christians?
It's a small number. They keep fleeing because of Israel. So that... Bethlehem has been closed off by Israel for many years. There are incursions into Israel, into Bethlehem itself, where people are beaten frequently. Young people, young men especially, are abducted. This goes on in Bethlehem. If you go to our website and see some of our reports every day, there are Christian sites that are damaged and invaded by Israeli forces frequently. Mm-hmm. And it's documented. If you're there, you can see them firsthand. It's just people are.
I'll go ahead, finish your thought. What were you going to say?
Oh, that's fine.
When I opened up the program, I wanted to strike an image that people can understand. Like, because if you have there, you have the people who are supporting, like this pastor also in the second clip, supporting this. And then he would be someone who'd go down there, and he would also be, we have undercover reports where people would dress up as a priest and be spit at like five times. And
recently, Israeli Channel 13 reporter Yossi Eli went undercover as a priest for a day. Dressed in a robe, he walked through the old city with Franciscan Father Alberto. In the first 5 minutes, he was spat at five times by Orthodox Jewish Israelis.
Christian citizens feel attacked in their places of prayer, in their cemeteries, and on the streets.
Christians in Jerusalem's old city say they are often harassed, spit on, and even physically attacked by religious Jewish youth.
That's the ironic thing, how you can go ahead and support something like this, but then there's a great disrespect happening, like is showing in this clip, towards not only the Palestinian Christians down there, but even evangelical Christians who have visited.
That's right.
Is this something that you've seen?
Evangelical Christians have been strip searched, you know, by Israeli guards. They're often they're treated quite well because they want to propagandize them, but not always. They get strip searched. They get spat upon. That's not rare. There's a certain aspect of Judaism, to be truthful, are very anti-Christian. I'm not saying all Israelis are. Most Israelis, I think, probably are not. We give them over $10 million a day. So, but there are shows on Israeli TV, in mainstream Israeli TV, making fun of Jesus in really very offensive ways. Those are, I think we've put some clips on. So there's been Christian churches
making fun of Jesus.
Of Jesus Christ, yes, of Mary.
Peace be upon.
Really grotesque shows, just laughing at them and dressing people up in weird ways. So
that's the strange relationship that if you can help us understand, and I guess you did with the explanation of the Scofield Bible, this con artist who put this together, and then who it was funded by. So I guess, would you say that this would be the reason, and then these pastors who are promoting this, according to this, and they're funded by this, that now they've been fooled and they've been indoctrinated with this false belief,
and this kind
that
of
this is a part of their creed.
This kind of information is just not available to people. They have no idea this is going on. That's a major part of it.
So what would,
people are manipulated.
What would you say to our Christian friends and neighbors and others who are listening to you as a Christian now? What advice would you give them? Who they feel strongly. This is, you hear rapture. I spoke to the pastor about this also. He said, we believe in Jesus' return, like we do as Muslims, but they push this, that he'll return twice. This is not a biblical teaching, he said, and much of this rapture theology, mm-hmm. if you want to comment on that, he said also this is something that's made up, and a lot of people believe this. What advice would you give to them?
Well, to look into it more fully, to go to more theologians. I'm not one, so I'm not going to pretend that I am.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of, when you want to find the truth, in this day and age, you can. It's there. And there, what's interesting is that many denominations now have made statements in support of Palestinian rights because they know the facts about what's going on in Palestine. They've traveled there independently. They've met with Palestinian Christians and Muslims. They've seen firsthand what's done. Sometimes there have been I think Americans, again, don't know that there have been nonviolent demonstrations virtually every week, sometimes two or three a week, for many years, often in small villages by just normal people whose lands are being taken by Israel. I've seen them, I've been in them, and the Israeli military comes along and beats people and meets them with violence. These are unarmed villagers that are beaten, and nobody ever, they do this. It's very courageous because in a number of cases, people are shot. Sometimes they're killed. A few have been Americans who've been killed or maimed. But of course, most of them are Palestinians. And the power of nonviolence, for example, with Gandhi, with Martin Luther King, is that people see it. They see people nonviolently trying to demonstrate for their rights or against injustice. And that's the power. Then when they're met with violence and people see it, they are horrified. Well, Palestinians have been doing this for years, under great risk that they will be injured, maimed, killed, and yet they still do it. But the American public, which is funding Israel, doesn't see it. Fox News doesn't ever cover it. CNN rarely, if ever, covers it. MSNBC doesn't cover it. So NPR doesn't cover it. So this has been going on for years. And then finally, in 2018, the people in Gaza, in this prison, decided that they would try a huge, huge Gandhian nonviolent march called the Great March of Return. Thousands of people came together every week near the barrier imprisoning them, men, women, and children. There were, you know, it was announced ahead of time. You could see people gathering, and there's the women's march. Everybody was very excited that they were going to do this and the world would see it. And finally, they would stop. They would get their rights. Their children would be able to prosper. And Israel deployed snipers and shot a number of them the very first day. They did this every week for almost 2 years. It was over a year and a half, about a year and two-thirds or something. They did this every week, thousands of them. There were, you know, many people were shot every day. Now there are people, children with amputated limbs. There are people, you know, not only are the killed people, but the people that have lifelong injuries. And week after week after week, by what supposedly our ally that gets over $10 million per day of our tax money, and Americans don't even know it went on.
Wow. I want to show one more clip from this pastor and ask my next question before we conclude.
I'm sick of all these Christians saying we ought to have peace with Islam. Islam is a satanic death cult, and they would cut your head off before I said amen in this sermon if they had a chance to.
Did you ever feel, you got to hear that, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever feel, you traveled to Gaza, the West Bank, you know, when people that don't get out of their hometown and they don't travel, they don't mix besides just, you know, the community that they're around. And then they hear something like this from this pastor. I think it's very, very dangerous. Because he's painting a picture. He's painting a picture like if a Muslim gets a chance, he's going to chop your head off. Did you at any time feel that at danger? Did you feel your life was threatened because you're a Christian and you were around some Muslims?
Never. I was, you know, the first time I went, as I said, was February and March of 2001. I wandered around by myself with my notebook and little camera, went around Gaza by myself, walking around. You know, I was invited to stay in people's homes, which I was glad to do. I was never... It was actually very safe.
People invited you to stay in their home. Yes. Did they know you? Were those cousins or brothers? Or
no. I don't have any relatives that are Palestinian or this was just, they were so happy.
Were these like very rich people that they had huge mansions that they're inviting you in their homes?
Most were not, but one was. One had actually a very nice home. But even, most weren't, you know, they were just random people that would meet me. And we're very, you know, when I would go around, I was in Khan Yunus, for example, that's, you know, talked about if you watch the news a lot. I was in Gaza City, I was in Rafah, and people would come up to me, you know, crowds of people, because there were no other Americans. This was at the height of the second uprising called the Second Intifada. And they would come up and just say hello, because they had, you know, a lot of people, it's like if somebody French came, we'd all say bonjour, even if we didn't speak French. But there are a number of people that do speak English that's taught in the schools. So, you know, they were happy to have me there and would want to show me what was going on to their homes. They'd take me in and show me how bullet riddled they were. And then they would ask me to tell Americans about them, which I told them I would do. And that's why I'm still doing it now. I went back on other trips, one time with my daughter. We traveled around. We couldn't get into Gaza because they've kept it closed off. I went and got into Gaza one time since. But we went around the West Bank that's also being, you know, also under daily attacks by Israeli forces. Saw it firsthand. We were never at any risk. This is just, there was another thing. There's so much, you know, this is 20 years worth of, I could talk for weeks, but there was even in about 2003, there was a group, this is well documented, a number of Israel partisans and groups came together to intentionally create Islamophobia, that they would promote anti-Muslim feeling around the United States.
And who is that?
This was, it's written about, it's actually, there's an article about it on the, let me see if I can bring it up. I think it was well-funded by, can't remember the name, let me just look this up.
The pastor I was talking to, he was kind of alluding to the same thing, that this was orchestrated. This was set up to plant this in the minds of Americans, this hate of Muslims and Islam, to create this division between Christians and Muslims.
That's right. This has been going on by a number of people. And again, it's documented. I don't believe in conspiracy theories. I want to confirm
me neither,
the
me
facts.
Neither. I don't have time for it.
That's right.
And I want facts.
People, if any conservatives do watch this, they know how often the media is slanted against that portion of our population. There's a lot of misinformation about what conservatives have done. So they should realize that that same kind of misinformation and twisting and omission is going on about Palestine. You know, the media they trust are not trustworthy on the Palestinian issue. Almost, you know, very few, none of the mainstream ones that I've seen really do have good coverage of it. Even though they often had accurate coverage on other things. So conservatives have also often been called anti-Semitic. If you work on Palestine, or if you're conservative, you will be called anti-Semitic, falsely. Mm-hmm. So they need to realize it's not that, you know, don't believe that accusation. So let me just see if I can quickly get this information, because as I said, people go to our website, ifamericansknew.org. You can get all of this, but this is one of the main ones to know about.
Yeah, I think this is very, very important. When you have people who are fueling this hate, people who are in the business of hate, while we're trying to spread understanding, and that's what our program is about, helping people understand, to create tolerance, to create some kind of peace.
That's right.
Through education.
That's right. It's extremely, I think, this is a very strong word, and I don't use it very often, but it's truly evil to try to create hatred, to try to make entire populations hate other populations, when most populations are composed of decent human beings who love their children, who want to live in safety and peace. That's true of all populations,
absolutely,
including the Israeli population. And yet here you have
absolutely
an effort, a well-funded effort, to make Americans fear and hate Muslims. And they want, the same group wants Muslims to fear and hate Christians.
Absolutely. Like you said, this is evil. Yes.
So the groups that did this, and these aren't the only ones. There's Stephen Emerson, who's a supposedly anti-terrorist expert, who's an Israel partisan that goes around creating that. But then there's this group that was launched in earnest in 2003. This was a network. This, by the way, the person who wrote this particular article is a Jewish person. This is not anti-Semitic, but it's factual. A network of Jewish groups ranging from the ADL, which calls everybody they don't like anti-Semitic, ranging from the ADL and the American Jewish Committee, which is actually a pro-Israel organization, that's its main purpose, to AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. So those are three of the groups that gathered, there were others there also, gathered to address what they saw as a sudden rise in pro-Palestinian activism. So the meeting gave birth to this network to create fear and hatred of Muslims.
Those three groups?
Those
this
three
is
groups,
documented?
Yes,
this is something.
And others.
Wow.
Then I'm just going to read, they got one of the people that was paying for it, because, you know, the more money you have, the more effective your propaganda is. So there was, I'm just trying to read this quickly and I can't find his name.
While you do that, I want to just show my audience, there'll be a clip of showing you have former Israeli personnel. You have also a former intelligence person showing how they used this term anti-Semitic. They weaponize it. So you just keep searching, and this is a tactic and a ploy. So I'll let them go ahead and listen to this.
And of course the campaign starts, and before you know it, the guy's labeled. and he's an anti-Semite, because that's what we say he is. And that's one stain you cannot wash. Now, it shames me as a Jew to tell you that, but that's the fact, and it's wrong.
That's right. Well, I think if they just Google this, as we say these days, just there's something called the Great Islamophobic Crusade. It's on our website.
The Great Islamophobic, it's on your website, if Americans only knew.
Yes.
They look for the Great Islamic.
That's right. By the way, our website, our official name is If Americans Knew.
ifamericansknew.org.
Yes.
Yes. What was that, the title again?
The Great Islamophobic Crusade.
Oh, the Great Islamophobic Crusade.
And I mean, that, and that, this is just evidence. One of a number of initiatives to.
Okay. To create. My last question here is, go ahead. You want to add something else?
No, just there are a number of initiatives. This is one of many to create anti-Islam beliefs in the United States.
My last question is, and I posed this question to many Christians and the pastor that I had on also. I said, do you get offended as a Christian when I say Jesus, peace be upon him? Does that offend you?
I love it.
You know, we obviously love Jesus.
That's the other thing that's so covered up, that Jesus is revered by Muslims. That's, people need to know that, and they don't know that Mary is revered by Muslims.
And yes, we believe Jesus was a messenger like Abraham, like Noah, like all of the messengers who came with the same message. Worship one and only one God and be morally upright. So there's no disrespect of Jesus, no hurtful things hurled at his mother. There's a whole chapter named after his blessed mother in the Quran. And what were you going to say?
I think just that this is, you know, there are extremists everywhere. So you can find some extremist action by Christian. You know, look at that pastor. To me, that was, you know, really horrendous extremism. But he doesn't represent all pastors. He doesn't even represent all the pastors that might believe that theology. You know, most of them would not be that horrible or that bloodthirsty. So.
Absolutely, yes. So it's been a great session again. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Same to you.
And that's Allison Weir with ifamericansknew.org.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Allison.
I cannot leave without giving you a gift. If you're not yet Muslim and you're tuning in to see what these Muslims are talking about and you like a free copy of the Quran, go ahead and visit thedeanshow.com. We'll take care of the postage and everything and get it delivered to you. And if you still have some questions about Islam, call us at 1-800-662-4752. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. I'm Dr. Rania Awad, and I'm so excited to be here at the Dean Center, mashallah, which is under renovation. And I can't wait to see what's going to come. Inshallah, there's going to be a Dawah Center, there's a masjid, there's a school, an Islamic school, a gym, and what we hope, inshallah, will also have a mental health part of this center as well, inshallah. So I'm asking you to please make sure that you support this effort. Inshallah, I really hope that it spreads and really the knowledge of Islam and people get to know more about Muslims and Islam through this effort.